Blog Talk Radio.
Well, there is now a struggle between President Trump and Jeff Sessions, and it all boils down to what occurred when Sessions decided to recuse himself from the Russian investigation without alerting Trump or talking to Trump about it. And so now we've got this interminable Russian investigation that is being led by Mueller. And Jeff Sessions, I have to say, got played. He's an old political hand, and I'm sure he's a heck of a nice guy, but he got played, and now Donald Trump is very frustrated with him and apparently can't let the topic drop. And now Jeff Sessions has reportedly said, because Trump won't drop it, Trump saying that, because you did this and you did this unilaterally, you did it without any input, you did it without my blessing, and it was ill-conceived and now is having a terrible effect, you've possibly permanently damaged my presidency. So here's a little bit from ABC News on that.
On that press conference, recusing himself from any Department of Justice investigations into the 2016 Trump campaign. Of course, we know there are a number of things ongoing related to Russia's potential meddling in the election. And a lot of ground covered in that press conference there. I'm joined here by someone who can hopefully shed some light on some of that, our Deputy Political Director, Shoshana Walsh, here in New York. Thanks for being here, Shosh.
Sure, thanks so much.
I got a lot of questions. I'm hoping you have the answers.
me too.
Well, we heard Attorney General Sessions there say he's been considering recusal for a while. The timing of this is a little, it raises some questions, raises some eyebrows, I think it's fair to say. News last night just broke that he had actually had contact with a Russian official twice during the campaign.
Right, the Russian ambassador. And as we saw in that confirmation hearing, he was asked directly by Senator Franken about contact with Russian officials, and he said he had not. What he says in defending himself, we just heard that in a press conference and previously, is that they weren't talking about the campaign, and so he thought he was being correct, being truthful. But this is why this has created a firestorm, because he didn't disclose it during this confirmation hearing or even in the weeks after doing a little cleanup. Today he did the cleanup.
And we just heard John Carl there talk about the fact that the contact itself may not have even been the problem, because we may never know what was actually discussed in that meeting between these two officials. But the disclosure is the real problem here. He was not forthcoming in confirmation testimony in front of a Senate committee. He has denied up until now that anything untoward did happen. And even today, there's a real parsing of words happening there, right?
Absolutely.
He talked about, he was, to the best of his knowledge, he was as honest as he thought he could be at the time.
The way he understood it.
Yeah.
And in the question and answer portion of the press conference, I thought it was interesting when he was asked directly, did you discuss the campaign? He pointed out, well, ambassadors can be gossipy,
right?
But he doesn't recall it. Now, recall is a kind of a safe word, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because he can say he didn't remember that.
Right.
But it's important for our viewers to know that this wasn't 10 years ago. This was during the campaign. This was just last year. So
more fake news. So sick of these guys. I'm just sitting here thinking the level of propaganda in the media is so high, and these guys seem to, they convince themselves. They come up with something that is false, and then the false thing that they have, then they build on it and becomes this huge, huge mountain of truth and justice and everything. The media, the mainstream media, and especially the major news outlets like CNN are so corrupt and so infested with propaganda. I don't see how they dare criticize anybody else. It's just wild. All right, now we've got what they're saying could be the ultimate, the high point, the most dramatic time in Trump's presidency, with the statements by James Comey. And by the way, good morning. It is the 7th day of June. Hot out there. We had a warning yesterday for a potential flash flood with damaging hail, and it didn't really seem to rain where I was. So typical. They don't, like the other day when we had the massive showers, 2.5 inches over and by it's over by the golf course, but Sonoma Ranch area. And I didn't hear that on the radio. So I guess weather forecasting is still an art and a science, but James Comey, he told Jeff Sessions, "Don't leave me alone with Trump." James Comey seems like the most, you can say what you want about Trump, the most juvenile and lacking in self analysis of anybody out there, especially when he claims to be operating in the spirit of one of America's most influential theologians. Here's a little bit from the Daily News.
FBI Director James Comey told the Attorney General in February that he didn't want to be left alone with President Donald Trump, according to a new report. Comey approached Attorney General Jeff Sessions just one day after Trump asked Comey, in a private meeting, to end the FBI's investigation into his former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, officials told to the New York Times. The then FBI director did not tell Sessions of the president's request. He only said private meetings between the FBI director and the president were inappropriate, according to the Times. He believed Sessions should protect the FBI from White House influence. Sources told the outlet that Sessions could not guarantee the president wouldn't try to have another private conversation with Comey. The former FBI director, who was fired by Trump on May 9th, will...
He didn't have a private... From what I understand, he didn't have a private conversation with him. He met with him in a group full of people. So Comey loves to stretch the truth when it suits him. I got some headlines for you. I don't know if you heard the show yesterday, but there was quite a bit of back and forth between Kathy and I, and a little bit with Frankie, and even Ralphie jumped in regarding the murders of the gentleman up in Portland. All right, so I listened to it. I think it went on maybe a little too long. Maybe, hopefully, wasn't boring at some point, but I thought it was a good back and forth between someone on the right, someone on the left, and I do think it is high time for the people on the left to get a clue and understand you have an opinion. It's just an opinion. Well, just like I have an opinion. Now, maybe I can persuade you my opinion is correct. Maybe I can lay out some arguments and facts and stuff. Maybe that'll persuade you. Maybe it won't. But the left acts like a bunch of three-year-olds and that no one is allowed to disagree with, and they have a fantasy view of life, and they come up with their own version, and because they own all this media apparatus, they can put it out 24/7, 365. But Kathy, others, if you agree with me or don't agree with me, it's just opinions. They become more meaningful once you start persuading people. And you can't persuade people if you don't let them talk, unless it's a dialogue, you know? This idea that you're going to go out and tell the truth, anybody who disagrees with you is going to get shut down. and they don't have a right to free speech unless they accept your facts, your opinion, in other words. You know, we in America must move on from this. All right, so I've got a little Sergio Mendes, and the lady that introduces this is the very strange Eartha Kitt, very, very talented, but kind of a strange person. I got a biography of her, but 6:15 a.m. Las Cruces, a.m. 1450, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. I have the text machine, 805-6180. We'll be right back. Feel free to call in and give your opinion or your version of the facts, and especially if you disagree. We'll be right back.
I'm proud to present a new look, a new sound, a new approach that certainly spells Sergio Mendes and Brazil 66.
All right. So what else was she into? Reality Wiener was into... I've got more of a quote here. She is, well, like I said, wants to march, take part in the Women's March and the Islamic Society of North America. How would this, somebody like this, even know what she believed was true, you know? Got all these radical commitments in her mind. So, all right, so let's move on here. If you're wondering, I think I've got a couple of clips here on... The question is, why are France and the UK hotbeds for terror? And I've got a little clip for you on that from Fox.
A man with a hammer attacked a cop near Notre Dame, the cathedral in Paris, reportedly while screaming, "This is for Syria."
I was right at the door of the entrance, and we heard people rushing through the door, trying to get in, and the police behind them. And the police were just telling us, move to the front. Of course, I don't speak French. I didn't know what they were saying, but I knew that they were serious.
I didn't expect that this happened here. Like, I was expecting that we went to the cathedral and everything was fine.
Well, mercifully, the only casualty today was the attacker himself, who was shot by an officer on the scene. President Trump says that these attacks show the need for his travel ban. But beside easy travel, what other factors have made Europe such a common terror target? Douglas Murray is the author of The Strange Death of Europe. He's thought a lot about this, and he joins us from London. Douglas, thanks a lot for coming on. One of the things you often hear Americans say, I have said, including last night, is that assimilation is the problem. These people are not assimilated. And yet you look around, and there are actually a number of groups in our society and yours who aren't assimilated. Hasidic Jews live apart. The Amish live apart. They pose no threat at all to the country they live in. They love the country. Why is this group different?
Well, that's the key question, the one that people in Europe, across my entire continent that I'm sitting in, are thinking about and mulling about at the moment. The political response is to tweak bits of anti-terrorism legislation. The British Prime Minister tonight has announced that she will even perhaps take Britain out of some of the human rights jurisdictions that we're under. And this is the sort of thing that all the politicians do across Europe. Another terrorist attack occurs, and they have tweaks, effectively. But all the time, the public are wondering about these very deep problems underlying it, which include the one you just asked. What is it about people from these Muslim communities across Europe that mean that, you know, on an average Saturday night in London, just down the road from where I am, three young men of Pakistani, Moroccan, Libyan origin would end up stabbing repeatedly at young people while shouting, "This is for Allah." The truth is that it is obvious in one way. I mean, they are inspired by a version of Islam, a very violent and the worst possible version of Islam. But you know, our politicians are really stuck on this because they, through immigration rules they've had for decades, they brought this problem into Europe. And now they just seem to be totally unable to admit that or do any of the things that would solve it, because they gave us this problem.
And against all evidence, they lie about the motive. So if you want to know why someone's doing something, The first step is to ask him, why are you doing this? I want to put up on the screen quotes from an Islamist magazine. These were printed directly after the Orlando nightclub attack here in the United States, and they say it really clearly. We hate you first and foremost because you are disbelievers. That's about as clear as it could possibly be. Then they go on to point two, which is, we hate you because your secular liberal societies permit the very things Allah has prohibited, while banning many of the things he has permitted. Your secular liberalism has led you to tolerate and even support gay rights, alcohol, drugs, fornication, gambling, and usury. They're widespread. You encourage people to mock those who denounce these filthy sins and vices. We could go on. But look, the point is, they're saying this is a religious war. Why don't we believe them?
Well, because if it is true, then we've got all sorts of miseries ahead of us. I happen to think we do. But, you know, in the meantime, we're in this transition phase in Europe. You know, I just came from a public debate I was doing in Westminster tonight. And, you know, the people are still, although things are moving, they are still in that sphere where it's, you know, they're saying, you know, what has our foreign policy done that might have caused this? Or, you know, if a guy comes from Pakistan, as one of the attackers on Saturday night did, I don't think much of our country's Pakistani foreign policy could be blamed on this. You know, people are sort of almost reaching out to find any reason other than the one that's staring them in the face. Because, as I say, again, there's this issue. It came up in Manchester 2 weeks ago. People try to say, you know, what's our foreign policy problems that have caused this? Again, you know, nothing that means you'd blow up 22 people at an Ariana Grande concert in Manchester Arena on
exactly.
a Monday night.
That's exactly right.
But the person who did that, by the way, you know, his parents came to this country from Libya. They got asylum, and then their kid at the age of 22 blew up 22 people, one for each life, a year of life that this country had given him. And those are the questions that our politicians are just totally incapable for the time being of addressing. And so we have this terrible and growing vacuum.
I want to go back quickly to something you just said, because I thought it was provocative. You said, if the obvious is true, if what they say about their own motives turns out to be true, it spells a tough time ahead. What does that mean exactly?
Well, let me give you a quick example. I mean, we all know that it's a tiny number of actual people from the Muslim communities who are going to carry out a terrorist attack. But two polls last year, one in April last year and one in December, by very reputable organizations, showed that in one poll, a half, and in the other, two-thirds of British Muslims said they would not go to the police if somebody they knew was involved in ISIS-like groups. Now, the rest of us in Britain would go at the drop of a hat if somebody we knew of any background or orientation was involved in extremism. But that's what we're now facing. It's this question of, well, if they wouldn't even try to stop an attack like Saturday if they heard about them, where is the loyalty? What are they doing? What are they thinking? The truth is that a lot of those people, they want to defend the faith and protect their faith as they see it, more than they want to show, as it were, the loyalty that should be demanded by a nation of its subjects.
Douglas, as
I say, we're still at the point where people don't want to demand that.
No, because it's too scary. I'm buying your book right after this. Douglas, thank you for joining us. That was really interesting.
Well, so that's the question, isn't it? If the people are loyal to their beliefs, their religious beliefs as opposed to the country, what can you do about it now? I suggest to you, this is in part due to the murder and mayhem that is mentioned in the Quran, but also it is due to the fact that they never developed the idea of a nation state. There's only one, there's two nations, the nation of God and the nation of Shaitan. We'll be right back. One last break here. right, here is a little bit of Norm Macdonald for you talking to David Letterman.
I saw a hypnotist when I was a boy, when I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Ravine the Impossibilist.
The Impossibilist. And you saw him in a theater? Or?
Yes, in a big theater. And I don't know if you've ever seen these shows. They bring up guys from the audience, and they talk to them, and then one guy can speak Martian. And then he touched the other guy. Ooh, he can do something else. And then a quarterback. And then another guy's a chicken.
Right.
So anyways, they go, and everybody runs around. So anyways, I'll never forget. I was sitting there on the aisle with my brother, and the guy that thought he was a chicken came running by me, pecking at things and, you know, cluck, 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 and all this. So
he was pecking at things.
Yeah, so, you know, grain and
sure,
his own feces and all sorts of things. So he exits anyways. And then after the show, I'm quite astonished by the whole thing because I'm only a young lad.
Mm-hmm.
And I go out into the parking lot and I see the guy. There's the guy that was the chicken. So I walk up to the guy and I go, man, how'd that feel? It must have been amazing. Feel like a chicken, right? How'd that feel? And he goes, oh, it was cool.
Really?
So then I thought, I don't know. You know, because imagine if for 15 minutes you thought you were a chicken, right? Then afterwards you'd be like. And then I go, hey, say, how'd it feel? Acting like a chicken. You go, oh, huh? You know, he'd have to spend the rest of his life trying to get back on track because his mind had been shattered.
Shattered by the experience of being a chicken?
Well, of course. If you thought for 10 minutes that you were actually a chicken, would
sure.
you be able to do the show the next night?
I don't, I guess not.
Or would you go,
no,
wow, you're cool.
You're exactly right.
All right. So just summing up what we've talked about, Jeff Sessions threatening to quit because, and in my opinion, this is probably accurate, that he let down Trump by without consulting Trump, without even telling him what his plans were, he handed authority of the Russia investigation over to somebody else. And so he got played. He got played by the left, as always happens. And so Trump is having a hard time letting this go. And but we've also talked about a reality winner and a few other things. Reality here is a few more quotes from this pinhead, this social justice warrior. Kathy, if you were 25, would you be reality winner? Number one, being white is terrorism. Number two, larger hands. She continually tweeted out larger hands to attack Trump. Number three, defeat ISIS with Starbucks. Not really sure what that means. Number four, Donald Trump burns crosses. Number five, apathy is class warfare. Number six, minorities are the victims of pollution. So here, and this lady, the lady said that her daughter had never mentioned anything political in her life. That is just a big fat lie. And she called our president a soulless ginger orangutan. She was only political, my friends. We'll be back after a break on the hour, 523, 1450 AM, Las Cruces.
It's a magic that you don't do.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Hi, Kelly. You were never young and idealistic, make mistakes. I mean, trash this poor thing, but her mother.
Uh-huh, poor thing.
She's going to go to jail. Well, you know what? She did something that she shouldn't have done, and she's going to pay the price. But, you know, have fun trashing her for her political beliefs at 23.
Hey, wait a minute.
How old
Kathy, there's one thing to believe, have a belief. It's another thing to act out on it and do something that could endanger a lot of people.
Yeah, something stupid, no doubt. And it would have been better to keep that from the Russians, though lots of other people knew it within the agency. Yeah.
I don't even.
She made a mistake. She shouldn't have done it. She made a promise that she wouldn't do it. Something like that. And she's young and stupid and going to pay the price. So, I mean, what else?
You have full sympathy for this lady, and everything that she believes is true. Everything she believes is true, right?
Excuse me?
Everything she believes is true.
No, you know, it's true to her, maybe. I'm just saying, you know, she made a mistake, and she's going to pay the price for it. You're just going to drag her over the coals for your political beliefs. And,
you know, Kathy.
You know, I feel I have a right to know what's going on in my government. You know, at some point, this is the kind of stuff that gets buried for eons and comes out after we're all dead.
Kathy,
you know, I have a right to.
Kathy, how do you know this report is even true?
We don't. Let's play it out. Let's listen to it. I mean, you guys have put up such a wall. You don't want to hear this story, but it probably happens because that's what Putin and Russians do. I mean, my God, you're madder at Hillary for a server than you are at all this crap going on. Unbelievable. Anyhow, Kelly, you know, the girl's going to pay. Well, you know, what do you, like I said, what do you want? You want her dead? She's a kid.
She's the one who said that white people are terrorists. What color is she?
She's white. And, you know, if you read history a certain way, lots of white people have been terrorists. Talk about the lynchings, even in the 50s and 60s and 70s, and the crap that still goes on, like on the train. White people are terrorists. So are black people. Evil people are terrorists. So what can you do? She's young. She made a mistake. She spouts off when she shouldn't. I'm 65, and I spout off when I shouldn't. So anyhow, have a nice day, Kelly.
You too, Kathy.
Thank you.
All right, so let me give you some more headlines. This is from Google News. Trump names FBI director nominee Christopher A. Wray, any relation to Faye Wray, the lady that was in King Kong. Islamic State attacked and blew up the parliament and Khomeini's tomb in Iran. Tesla becoming big in China, supposedly. Kaepernick, the quarterback, Colin Kaepernick, he claims he's being treated unfairly. They tried to hire him in Seattle, but he wouldn't do it for the money. And death toll rising to 8 in London Bridge attack after body found in a river. Woman on trial for texts driving boyfriend to suicide, encouraging him to kill himself. See anything else here you might like? Not too much else there. Don't see too much else. All right, so I have a rare treat here for you. Kathy calling in yesterday, and that call turned into kind of a two-hour argument with her, but this is how it started when she called in on break. Check it out. It's Kelly.
This is one of the self-righteous idiots you were talking about.
You?
So you finally got someone to nail their little butts to the wall over releasing stuff that the general public just doesn't need to know. This is for the elitist up there. This is for the archives to be released 25 years from now so we can find out that Russia really did help Trump get in. If it were the birth certificate that she released from Kenya, you guys would be all for it. All for it. Wouldn't you, Kelly?
So what she did was right. As long as you can hold on a second. Hold on a second. You asked me a question. Allow me to answer. What she did was right because you like the subject matter.
No, that's not true. What she did was right. The general public in this country needs to know what's going on. It doesn't matter.
All right, so let's throw the law out the window.
Why do you think I pay taxes? These people work for me. You know, when the president goes into the Oval Office and he has party down with the Russians and tells them Comey is an idiot and we got rid of him, you know what? Yeah, I have a right to know that my
sure, Kathy.
I have
sure.
a right to know what is going on in the government. This isn't something that should be released, like I said, 25 years from now when you open the archives and say, you know,
uh-huh.
what went on 20 years ago. I need to know. That's
sure.
I live in a free
right.
country.
Throw the law out the window. It doesn't matter as long as you agree with,
no,
right?
No, she's going to pay the price. We're not throwing the law out the window, Kelly. She's going to go to jail.
You just said you
just
needed,
like
you, Kathy, Kathy, why is, he Kathy, loved Kathy,
he loved WikiLeaks.
Kathy, Kathy.
But now that he's in the hot seat, it's not so fun. Is it?
Why do you have to talk over me every single time we have a discussion?
Well, because the way the phone is, Kelly, I don't hear you talking. It sounds like you're being quiet. Shit, I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
I'm not trying to talk over you.
Other
it's
people. Right. So you continue to talk and continue to talk even when I'm trying to respond, regardless. Okay, just like Reality Winner has a right to release all the documents.
You guys have a phone situation down there that maybe you ought to work on. Because you don't get back and forth. If you're talking now, I have a blank sound. I'm not hearing anything.
Because I'm listening because you don't allow me to squeeze a word in. Because when I say one thing, it triggers you and you go off on this rant. Can you hear me?
can. I'm trying to listen.
Oh, for God's sakes.
You're not talking. Jeez. I swear. Anyhow, why am I listening to this show? I knew what it was going to be.
Of course, Kathy. You're better than the show. You're just like Reality Winner. You're better than everything. You can do anything that you want, and you can come and poop on my show.
That's not true. I'd be willing if I were her age and single.
Folks, all right, so that's, and then you, if you were listening yesterday. But anyway, so here is this debate. The debate is over. And I actually get into it. Maybe I'll find another clip tomorrow. But here's the thing. And this is what I would say to you, Kathy. This is what I would say to you, Frankie. And yes, Kathy, you do talk over whether you think nobody's talking or not. Nobody who's trying to communicate talks for 10 minutes nonstop and doesn't take a breath. But it is a conversation that we're trying to have in the country and deal with issues. It's great to be convinced that you're right. It's wonderful to be confident and to feel sure that your ideas are sound. That's great. But if you talk to other people as if only you have the facts, only you are correct. Anybody who disagrees with you is just 100% wrong. How would you ever find out if you were mistaken about anything? You know, and to call, you know, the only reason that you interact with someone is to download information so that they can hear the truth, and you're not going to listen to them because they're totally wrong. I mean, I don't think that for the Kathys out there, you understand how destructive that is as a theory of communication. It's a total disaster. People think of you guys as maniacs, as complete zealots, and that's how you come across. So it's your fault that people think that way, not our fault. And the whole idea, and what this guy was saying yesterday, and I had that clip on postmodernism, which I have another clip for you if you want to hear that. He was saying the purpose that we're here is to experience, to take part in this experiment of liberty and free speech. That's the whole reason we're here. Kathy, if you think that you know everything and you don't want to listen to anybody else, you're not even taking part in the American tradition and the, you know, the zenith of what America has achieved. All right, we'll come back and got a couple other topics. I want to get a little bit into the law of Britain and whether, here's the question. If somebody says that they love jihad, would that be enough reason to arrest them or to imprison them or to deport them? I'm just curious because those are the people that it turns out are the ones that are blowing up people. They're going on TV and talking about how they love jihad, and then they're taking the opportunity to kill people. So 6:15 AM Las Cruces, 523, 1450, and 805-6180. We'll be right back. Corcovado.
Quiet nights of quiet stars, quiet chords from a guitar, floating on the silence that surrounds us.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, Kelly, Thomas.
Hey, what's up, man?
Well, I was listening to your questions there with regard to should we be able to do something legally with individuals who swear allegiance to jihad or ISIS?
Hey, Thomas. Thomas, let's bring it on the air in 20 seconds.
Okay.
Just be one, just a little end of this break here.
Very well.
Thomas, turn down your radio.
Okay.
We have Thomas who's called in on the topic of if someone supports jihad, you know, espouses jihad, whether they could be the authorities could deal with them if you know, prosecution or whatever. Go ahead, Thomas.
I think the very least that could be done, the prime example would be what you have going on in England. If I'm not mistaken, 2,000 to 3,000 citizens of England there have actually traveled to Syria to fight for and with ISIS and returned to their country of origin. They are English, and that is not technically, but literally and legally, treason. And England has done nothing about that 2,000 to 3,000. There are many more thousand who have sworn allegiance in England to ISIS. I wouldn't go so far as to say in a free democracy or a republic, in our case, that you couldn't disagree and you know, freedom of speech and all that. But when a person actually travels and fights for the enemy, that is not technically, that's legally and practically treason, and they should be locked up.
Yeah, now there was an interesting thing. One of these people that got killed, one of the jihadists was on TV. He was on TV supporting jihad and saying, you know, that you know, we needed ISIS and everything in the UK. And yet the authorities didn't do anything, and then he ends up killing people. That's got to be devastating for the population to see that it doesn't matter what you say or, you know, what you're committing yourself to publicly. It doesn't matter. You can have as much freedom as anybody else, and when the time is right, you can go kill people.
Right. I think what you're going to see in Great Britain these days is they've had it. The prime minister now saying, you know, things such as, you know, enough is enough. So I think they're finally going to wake up from this liberal perspective that says, you know, we can just be nice to each other and talk to each other. These people are intent on killing people. And as I say, if they travel to fight with ISIS, I say it's treason. And the minute they set foot back in the country of origin, lock them up.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I agree. And so I'm wondering, though, if you found that there were 3,000 people who, as far as you could tell, were committed to jihad, why not deport them?
Well, in the case of England, the example I'm giving, they're British citizens.
So?
Where are you going to deport them?
I don't know. Make an offshore prison. They actually, well, I mean,
I wonder if the Aussies would have them, huh?
But down in Botany Bay, we've got to take a strong stand. I mean, if there's an existential threat from these people, and they're not operating as, you know, if they're not operating as a normal religion, why give them religious protection? It seems to me, Islam in general, as having studied it in history, is a political movement with a religious element in it. So why?
Right.
Put them in the same category.
Well, I don't disagree with you. One last word, and then I'll let go and listen. Let others call in. The Islamic community needs to be saying more, much, much more. You know, Saudi Arabia and some of those countries have recently, you know, distanced themselves from Qatar. That's a good start. But they really, really, anyone who's an Islamist, well, not an Islamist, but a Muslim, should be speaking up much, much more voluntarily to denounce and to divorce themselves from this radical ideology, which is basically circumventing their religion. And if it were my religion, I'd be screaming, you know, to the high heavens.
Well,
thank you,
yeah, thanks a lot, Thomas. All right, so the argument is that it's not circumventing the religion, it is their religion. That is the one of the foundations. So there was a billboard that was put up in, I'm trying to remember if it was Indiana, and the billboard listed the sins of Muhammad, basically. And all right, so here it is. Indy Muslims call out creator of local billboard that insults the prophet Muhammad. An anti-Muslim billboard, and I have a clip on this here too if I can get it to run. An anti-Muslim billboard disparaging the prophet Muhammad can be seen from the southbound lanes of I-465 on the east side of, I don't know if that's in St. Well, obviously not. I don't know the layout of Indiana, but here's a clip on this. But here's what the billboard says. The perfect man, in quotes, married a six-year-old girl, beheaded Jews, 600 Jews in one day, slave owner and dealer, 13 wives, 11 at one time, rapist, tortured and killed unbelievers. Now the Muslims are going, you know, understandably going ballistic over this, but I think almost all of these, well, I've mentioned at least half of these. He did marry a young girl, a daughter of Abu Bakr, and she, that girl, he deflowered her, I think, before the age of 10. Certainly everybody agrees she was not yet 10 when the marriage was consummated. He beheaded between 900 Jews when he went back to Medina, and had a number of wives and married his adopted son's wife. So anyway, here's from this clip from Indy Star. All right, so it doesn't really say anything. Has no audio. But so anyway, the country, you might think that some of the things that I'm saying are excessive on Islam, but having spent years, decades studying it, I don't see a way around it. They don't have human rights in their belief system. And their women's rights are barely developed. There is a right to marital rape because, number one, no Muslim wife has a right to resist demand for sex. Even if she's breastfeeding, even if she's cooking, she has to put down whatever she has in her hands and get ready. And there's a right to corporal punishment in Islam, as long as it doesn't disfigure the woman. So we'll take a break here, and we'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 and 805-6180. Stan Getz and Astrid Gilberto Corcovado by Jobim.
Quiet thoughts and quiet dreams, quiet walks by quiet streams, and a window that looks out on Corcovado, oh how lovely.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, Kelly. It's nice to listen to a part of the show that I agree with you and your caller. You know, I know what happened. It happens once in a while. That's why I listen. I want to hear your side, and occasionally there's something we agree about. And
what do we agree about?
You know, once you go, I agree with your caller. Once you go and fight for jihad, you have left your country. I don't care who you are. You don't come back. You stay over there. I don't care if you are a British citizen. You just got a new country.
I agree. But what about, what are we?
I'm afraid I'm talking over. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, we got the same problem over here, so we got the same issue to deal with.
I got the same solution. If you go fight for jihad in the Middle East, you have a new home over there. You know, if you travel to Syria, it's not a vacation spot.
the people that want to get out are coming out. If you're going back, why are you going back? You don't come back once you do that. You have a new life over there.
I agree, but what about... That's an easy one because these people are already fighting jihadists. But let me ask you this. What about people that espouse jihad, they advertise for jihad, they communicate to other people, they believe in jihad and Sharia? What about those people?
Boy, they need to be watched real closely. Those are the guys that need to be at the top of the NSA spy list. Those are the guys you need to watch. And, you know, gosh...
Those are the guys though that in Britain are going they make a TV appearance and then they go and kill somebody. I don't understand how you can keep those people in the government or in the country.
In the country, I don't either. It's time that you go practice your jihad and Sharia law where it doesn't conflict with freedom like we live over here and in the West. I guess as liberal as I am, I'd say they need to go. They need to go.
Agreed 100%. Thanks.
Yeah. I agree with you, Kelly. Have a nice day.
You too, Kathy. Bye-bye. All right, so just got off the phone with Kathy, who agrees 100% with Thomas and myself. Now, here's the question. Everybody wants these people who go to jihad, who go to Syria to fight. Kathy says if once they do that, that's where they live. I agree with that. But what about the people that are promoting jihad? What about the people that are promoting Sharia? Can you leave those people in the society? Now, those are two different topics. A Muslim could say, and I mean, let's face it, the vast majority of Muslims are nonviolent people. But a Muslim person could say, I accept Sharia. I have my own version of Sharia, but I do accept Sharia. But, I support a Sharia that fits within the Constitution or whatever. A person could say that. But if a person, on the other hand, says, well, I support Sharia and jihad is part of Sharia. I mean, you know, if the caliph or Ayatollah or any person who is in authority calls for jihad, it is the legal and moral duty for Muslims to go join and fight. So how do you, and if there is a problem with in the United States or in the UK and in Europe, in the world, basically, of a commitment. If a true Muslim only sees one commitment and that is to Allah, it's a problem. I mean, it's obviously a problem because, isn't that the person who's going to follow the order of jihad? So it is a conundrum, really, because nobody wants people to lose their rights of free speech and free belief. And no one wants a person's religious beliefs to discredit or to disallow them. But here's the thing. You could take any set of beliefs and call it a religion. Now, I was saying to a friend the other day, we were talking about the same topic, and I said, what if you took the mafia and said the mafia is a wing of Catholicism? because the religion, in I would assume, in most of the people who are in the mafia, in the La Cosa Nostra or whatever it's called, those people are Catholics, right? I mean, that's the religion of their homeland, the religion of their families. So why not say that the mafia, much like Islam, is a religion. So I think there's going to have to come a time, and it's going to take somebody like to come along and say, we need to reevaluate what the word religion means and see if this fits, if this movement fits within religion. Now, that would also challenge Islam to develop a kind of Islam, a reformation, which there's actually many, many varieties of it. They just name it something else and go off and do their own thing. But there are there's a lot of different religions over in the Middle East, and you have combinations of various religions. And so anyway, but the Islam itself has never been reformed. It's never gone through a reformation. That's what's needed. All right. 7:33 here. And what I want to do for you is, because I don't think that I looked last night for a statement on what the law was in the UK under for terroristic statements. And I couldn't really find anything that was good. I'm going to have to do some more serious research. And so what I thought I would do is shift gears and put a little bit more on postmodernism, because I found the clip that I played interesting, but it's hard to get your head around it. So I found that on a number of important topics, there are mostly Christian videos. And when I'm looking for a video, I try to find stuff that's not too, you know, I don't want to play something that sounds like it's proselytizing when I'm trying to get information out. But a lot of times the reason that I do that, believe it or not, is because that's the only quality video, or the only video on the topic that I can find on the internet. So anyway, here's the Ankenberg show, John Ankenberger. Oh, Ankenberg, he's talking to Dr. Ravi Zacharias about postmodernism. But what is postmodernism? Okay, so we heard this clip on it yesterday. I propose for you that postmodernism, which uses a lot of cliches that are very, or terms of art, words of art that are very hard to follow because you've never heard them before, or the way that you heard them was so different than how they're being applied, it makes your head swim. Pose to you that the movement called postmodernism stands for the idea is there's no overarching truth. There's only opinion. Now, you apply that to different areas, especially the sciences and government and the legal system, and you get total chaos because everything just becomes an opinion. So anyway, here's a little bit from that clip. It was stated that the most influential theory out there today is postmodernism. That may be true. Think about this. The way that people on the left define gender, it doesn't matter what you're born with. It matters who you are inside your head. That is what gender is. That's postmodernism in application. So check this out. And this is from the site John Ankenberg Show. And it starts off with a question on the screen. What does the term postmodernism actually mean? And I don't know why it's not playing. Oh, okay. This is what happened. I was talking to somebody off the air, and I turned off the machine's sound. Here we go.
And Robbie, the first question I want to tackle today comes from a student who says, you know, everybody seems to be talking about postmodernism. What does that term actually mean?
You know, if in the West especially, John, if you look at the mother of all philosophies, as it were, it's the continent of Europe. You know, you go back to rationalism in the time of René Descartes and so on. Rationalism was succeeded in the Enlightenment, and then empiricism came on. From empiricism, we moved to existentialism, and after existentialism came postmodernism. This is fascinating, because if you go back to rationalism, it is by reason alone. If you go to empiricism, it was, you know, the empirical method and logical positivism, and all of this came into being. But then came the existentialists in the 60s and so on, people like Jean-Paul Sartre, Albert Camus. They were brilliant writers, and basically what they were doing was saying this: hey, wait a minute, all this cerebral stuff, all this laboratory stuff and all sounds wonderful, but I'm a person with desires and emotions and feelings. Where does all this fit into your theory? I will, I feel, I want. And so existentialism was really the will to make your own choice in the face of despair and find some meaning in your own life. And they were very sharp in how they did this. They moved away from the academic world of theory to the world of literature in storytelling. So Sartre and Camus and all were pouring out the books, you know, No Exit, Nausea. And as they were The Wall, these famous books, and they were short books, some of them, but they were telling a story, and university students were gobbling this up. They could identify themselves in the story. So you moved from sort of rationalism to empiricism to existentialism, and finally came postmodernism, and postmodernism decided to throw all of those out, and they said, look, these are too absolutistic, you're giving me boundaries. And so postmodernism, if it's defined, can be defined in three terms: no truth, no meaning, no certainty. No truth, no meaning, no certainty. Jacques Derrida, again, the Frenchman, became one of the prime movers of this philosophy. He was lecturing all over the United States. And what came out of this was post-structuralism. Even the story was now dismantled. Forget the argument. The story was going to be jettisoned. And it moved the authority of interpretation from the author to the reader. The reader could rewrite, the reader could reinterpret, the reader could retell, and all of a sudden you had millions of people reinterpreting reality. Now, what I want to say is this: there was a sort of a sliver of truth in all of those, you know, place for reason, the place for empiricism, the place for experience and will. And now the question of, hey, what authority do I have when I see all of this? So in grabbing the finger of one, they thought they were grabbing the fist of all of reality. The fascinating thing to me about the gospel is there's the place for reason, there is the place for experience, there's the place for empirical investigation, and there's the place for the individual and how God gives you your own individuality and restores to you the uniqueness in the way he's hardwired you. But postmodernism actually ended up doing huge damage in terms of authority, of structure, and of truth. No truth, no meaning, no certainty. And postmodernism has become the reigning worldview by implication. So I just have this question. If you're on a plane and the plane is in trouble, would you want a postmodernist pilot who says, I know this is what the instruments say, 10,000, but I'm going to believe there's no such thing as truth, meaning, and certainty, and I'm going to decide my own altitude. You don't do that when you're on the side of depending upon truth. There is such a thing as truth. There is such a thing as meaning, and there is such a thing as certainty, even in the way we make our choices. So postmodernism was nothing more than an escape hatch to make yourself God. Right from the beginning, there was a postmodernist in Genesis. Has God really said? Has God spoken? No truth, no meaning, no certainty. Right in the book of Genesis, postmodernism. So it's not post anything. It is actually the condition of fallen man.
Yeah, I think of postmodernism is that all the stoplights in the city are green. And if they were, you'd have chaos and wrecks. And that's what you have.
All right. So kind of an interesting take on that, but I was trying to find something that boiled it down. And when you listen to a lot of this stuff and read it, your head swims because they use so many, like I was saying, phrases of art. But to boil it down, it just means that there's no truth and you don't have the right to put your idea or your truth on anybody else. So it kind of breaks down community. That's one of the things that thinking about this when I heard it last night, I think it destroys authority. Ultimately, it destroys authority because there's no authority for a community or a group individual. 742 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. Got some weather for you. 523 1450 and 805-6180. I'll get to your text before the end of the hour.
Dreams, quiet walks by quiet streams, and a window that looks out on Corcovado. Oh, how lovely.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Yeah, Kelly, my name's Dave Gauss, Las Cruces resident. Are you aware that there's a march nationwide going on this Saturday?
What is it?
It's a march against Sharia law.
And really?
Human rights, and it's a perfect way to get conservatives, liberals, feminists, everybody, and good Muslims to march together to support the Muslim community and to show unity against Sharia law.
Oh, that's interesting. All right, so let me do a search on. I'll see if I can find a clip.
Well, I can give you the web page. It's actforamerica.com/rally. Actforamerica.com. The closest one's in Phoenix. I'm going.
Fantastic, man. You'll have to give a report when you get back.
I will. I hope I see a lot of your listeners there.
Okay, man. I'll play a clip. Thank you.
Thanks,
you bet. Bye-bye. You bet. I just got a call from someone who told me that there is going to be a march for or against Sharia law. And I had done when I used to write an article and it was published on Sundays in the Canada Free newspaper in Toronto. And I had sat down, I'm trying to multitask here, which I'm terrible at. I wrote this article. I tried to figure out if Sharia was compatible with American law. And when I really got down to it, and I had done a lot of research, a lot of reading, had written a number of articles, and it was just, it's not compatible. You can't have a set of laws that does not accept human rights as the foundation for your society. And you cannot compromise with Sharia. It is from a time long past. It's 1500 years old and it hasn't been updated. Here's Brigitte Gabriel, Act for America.
I'm an American that bleeds red, white, and blue. And unlike spineless politicians or the fake news media, I'm not going to let what's happening in Europe happen to America. After decades of unvetted Islamic immigration, Europe is left defenseless. The blood from young children in Manchester had barely dried before another band of Islamists slaughtered innocent civilians in London. Western civilization is under attack, fighting for its survival. We are at war. Our Judeo-Christian culture is under assault. Islamic terrorists who have no soul are killing young girls, women, children, and innocent bystanders in barbaric ways. Islamofascism is the issue of our time and must be stopped. That's why this Saturday, June 10th, We're organizing rallies in 29 cities in 21 states to take a stand before it's too late. This is your chance to show the fake news media what you think of their open border zealotry, to show spineless DC politicians what you think of their PC pandering, to show President Trump that you stand behind his necessary travel ban from terror-ridden nations. This is your chance to do more than just tweet for your country, forward emails, or post on your Facebook for your country. This is your chance to march against Sharia, march for human rights, march for America's future. Join us at these rallies and proudly wave your American flag. If not you, then who? If not now, then when? Europe waited too long, and look what's happening to them now. America is not Europe. We are taking action. America is not a geographical location. America is an attitude forged in bravery and patriotism. We don't give a flying kite whether the world approves of us or not. We do what we believe is right for America. This is our chance to show lamestream media and anti-American terrorist enablers like the Southern Poverty Law Center and the ACLU that we will not be silenced. We will not allow their phony cries of Islamophobia to prevent us from standing up for our nation and for true human rights. You will hear speakers from all faiths who see the danger that radical Islam poses to all Americans. We have a former imam and Muslims, female genital mutilation victims, acid attack and honor survivors, and LGBTQ activists. The Brits are telling their people to run, hide, tell. In America, we stand, fight, and win. We are putting our enemies on notice. America is not going to roll over for you like Europe. We are organized, passionate, strongly stand behind our Second Amendment rights, and committed to stand behind our president to defeat you. And as for immigrants and refugees to America bringing the same practices you supposedly escaped, we say to you, the women's suffrage movement fought for our rights, not so you can genitally mutilate young American girls in the name of culture or religion, or kill women in the name of honor in Texas, Georgia, or New York. We will protect American girls from your barbarity. If you want to live among us, adopt our culture, speak our official language, English, and obey our Constitution. We are not going to allow Sharia lifestyle in America or your leaders preaching hate and mosques harboring terrorists. You are on notice. The giant has awakened. And to all of you patriots, join us. If you see value in what we are doing, become a member of ACT for America and stand with us this Saturday, June 10th, at a rally near you. See you on the front line.
All right, so 7:50, we'll take our last break. But I want to remind you that you didn't ever hear this. The Archbishop of Canterbury, the head of the church in England, Rowan Williams, had stated that Britain had to adopt some elements of Sharia law, which is, it's sad to hear that. It's sad to hear people sell out, totally sell out. I mean, Cass Sunstein, who's probably the most quoted legal scholar alive, also saying we need to bring in Sharia law. I mean, I feel like I've studied it enough to understand the broad outlines of it. I don't see that we need anything from Sharia law. The legal system in America, which was we achieved as heirs of the Anglo Empire, is the greatest legal system in history. It's the one that revolutionized and brought to the forefront natural rights, which we built our Constitution out of. And now we're supposed to give that up for a primitive law that rules that people have to have their hands and feet cut off for theft? No, thank you. 751, 752, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. We'll be back.
This is where I want to be, here with you so close to me. Until the final flicker of life's ember.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Good morning, Kelly. Great show today. You're covering one of my favorite Christian apologists.
Oh, Ravi? Yeah, great guy.
Yeah. I just wanted to know real quick, who was that interview with, that snippet you played about postmodernism?
Yeah, that's Gabrielle. I can't remember her first name, but she's at the forefront of fighting against Islam in America.
Oh, no, I know. No, previous to that, I know her. I listen to her. She's great. But the short interview with Bobby.
Oh, that was John Anchor. That was the Anchorberg show.
The Anchorberg show. Okay, thanks a lot,
Kelly. You bet. Have a great day.
I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Too.
Okay. All right, let's get your comedy out of the way here. This lady is absolutely hilarious. I think I played this before, but it was so entertaining. Ophira Eisenberg, obviously Jewish, but commenting on poor Buddhism. Check this out.
London, amateur mistake.
Bring it back to the beginning here. And here we go.
And then I get to London, amateur mistake. We jet lag. We throw a couple pints down us, go to a bunch of pubs. And it's getting kind of late. We're sitting in a pub, and these two guys come in, and they see us, and they go right up to us with their iPhone, and they're like, "Hey, look at this photo!" And they are laughing. They're like, "Really? Look at it! It's hilarious!" And we're looking at it, but it's just the guy lying down. We don't really get it. And they're like, "Look closer!" And we look closer. We're just like, "No, we don't get it." They're like, "Ah, whatever," and they leave. And I go to my friend, "That was really weird." He's like, "Yeah, your bag's gone." I was like, "Oh, we were had." And we went to the police and told them the story. And they were like, "You got your purse stolen by gypsies." And I was like, "Really?" He's like, "Oh, yeah, it happens all the time." We're like, "Are you kidding?" They're like, "Oh, it's happened. That person. I really just can't believe it." And then he goes, "Where do you live?" I go, "New York City." He goes, "Well, doesn't that happen there?" No. We got a lot of shit that will happen to us here. But the one thing we can hang on to is that your bag will not get stolen by...
I do apologize. This was mistitled in the YouTube. So anyway, 7:55. She's got a clip on Buddhism that's pretty funny that didn't have any cursing. We've got another call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Big deal day today, Kelly O. Big deal day.
What's that?
Is going to drop the bombs on Trumper. It's all over for him, all over for the conservatives. You guys are toast. You're done. Hasta la pasta. You're gone. You know? I got my popcorn and I got my club soda ready.
And it's Frankie,
going to be great stuff.
Have you been drinking? You sound a little different.
It's early in the morning. I normally wouldn't be. No, I haven't been drinking. No.
Okay, that's.
I'm going to be drinking tonight when it's in the winter.
All right. And if it don't let me interrupt you, for God's sakes. So if the other shoe doesn't fall and Trump is not destroyed, are you planning on relocating to, say, Japan?
No, that's not going to happen. I mean, we just keep up the fight. You know, we keep up the fight.
What exactly, Frankie, what exactly are you fighting against or fighting for? I've never really picked that up because to hate somebody before they start serving strikes me as a little un-American.
Don't twist it around. Look, I mean, you know, yeah, this crop of conservatives are ruining everything.
Oh, of course. Hey. Frankie. All right, since he's not going to listen, I'll just take his mic down. Frankie, general question. Were the founding fathers conservatives or liberals?
Oh, they were for sure liberal.
Yeah, well, you know what? They were... very conservative in their thinking, and they might have been radicals and rebels against England, but I guarantee you if you told them all your thoughts, including socialism, they wouldn't have a lot of time for it.
Well, I don't know. We you can't go back in time. Unless
we can go back through since he's... I'm just going to start doing this. People talk. I try to ask somebody a question. They don't, you know, don't let me to have a conversation about it. I'm just going to pull down. I'm not going to fight people anymore. The question is, Frankie, where in the writings of the founding fathers was socialism found?
I don't know, but
it wasn't.
Okay. I don't know.
All right, so around 1800, socialism starts to become prominent. The founding fathers were for capitalism. They believed in enterprise. They believed in the government staying out of people's stuff. Exactly the opposite of what you believe.
You're wrong. I'm
100% correct.
Instead of getting in the face of everybody.
Uh-huh. All right, Frankie, have a good day. And enjoy Comey not taking Trump out, but thanks for the sentiments. All right, so anyway, we're left without any comedy clip at the end, which is depressing, but that's what I get for not test drive. You got to test drive everything you put on the air because they'll sneak stuff in. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. I really enjoyed the show today with you and hope you have a wonderful day. We'll meet back in 22 hours. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450 on KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, and have a good one.
I who was lost and lonely, believing life was only a bitter, tragic joke, have found with you the meaning of existence, oh my love.
Hey, it's Kelly. Let me hold on to this. Hold on one second. Hey, Kelly,
you're
there. Yeah, go ahead.
I who was lost and lonely, believing life was only a bitter, tragic joke, I found with you.